Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, Ecclesiastes, was arranged by Peter Lyon and is based upon the biblical book of Ecclesiastes. This program is presented in observance of the festival of Sukkot.
One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh, and the earth abideth forever.
Now is the season of Sukkos, the time of the harvest. In the meadows and vineyards around the ancient town of Yavne in Israel, this week, as 1900 years ago, men and women, girls and boys are gathering in the full fruit of the fields. Today, as 1900 years ago, the sun also ariseth and the sun goeth down and hasteth to his place where he ariseth. But with this difference, 1900 years ago, the ancient town of Yavne was a center of great learning, and the wise men of the people had gathered there with a task of great moment, to weigh, consider, judge, and finally decide which of the ancient writings were authored under divine inspiration, which would be admitted into the sacred canon. The 71 learned teachers gathered in a half circle, ranged in rows under the clear and open sky. And in time, it came about that this Sanhedrin, this supreme council of the Jewish people, sat in judgment on a book of writings which is called the Book of Koheleth, Ecclesiastes. And they listened to the oldest and wisest of their number, their president, Rabban Gamliel, as he stood to speak.
How say you? Who is first to speak?
Hear me, Gamliel.
The speaker is Rabbi Joshua, tall and black-bearded and calm.
These writings begin, the words of Koheleth, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. And again Koheleth writes, I, Koheleth, have been king over Israel and Jerusalem. I, Joshua, speak to urge the inclusion of this book in our canon. For just as the great and wise King Solomon wrote the Song of Songs in his youth, and the book of Proverbs in his age, so in his middle years, he being at the height of his powers, did King Solomon write this book of Koheleth. Koheleth is Solomon, and its words were touched with divine wisdom and imagery.
Hear me, Gamliel!
Now rising to speak from the other side of the semicircle is the Rabbi Eliezer, gaunt and spare, bright-eyed and thin-lipped.
These writings of Koheleth have no place in our sacred canon. I rise to oppose their inclusion. The wise King Solomon, in fact, may have written these lines, but all one needs to do is read them to satisfy himself that they are not of divine origin, cannot be of divine origin, and in truth are the writings of a man whose cynicism and worldliness are a hissing in the place of holiness.
Yes.
These are strong words, Rabbi Eliezer.
I rise to side with Rabbi Eliezer.
This is the voice of a younger man, Rabbi Jonathan, broad-shouldered and hard-handed.
For what lesson does this preacher teach? That wisdom is vanity, toil is vanity, that all human striving is futile, that there is no justice, nor indeed any profit in hard work, and that in the end, all the virtues which we should extol are but vanities and futilities.
If I may add a word, Gamliel.
Now standing is Rabbi Dosa, brother to the last speaker, Jonathan, a man who speaks carefully, whose memory is great.
By referring to just one among many distortions of the inspired truth.
Speak, Dosa.
Koheleth wrote, Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thy heart, and in the sight of thine eyes. The man who wrote these lines had forgotten the commandment laid down in the book of Numbers, where it is written, "Remember all the commandments of the Lord and do them, and that you go not about after your own heart and your own eyes, after which ye used to go astray." Is Koheleth not a clear denial of this commandment of the Lord? And does this not prove that the book of Koheleth is no sacred writing?
Rabban Gamliel.
Speak, Tarfon.
Rabbi Tarfon is a man who knows how to smile and whose eyes dance under his heavy black brows.
Our fellow members of this congregation, Gamliel, have an easy tendency to repeat a phrase from this sentence and a clause from that sentence. It is a hasty and unbecoming habit, rather as if they were to strip all the petals from a rose and show us just the green stalk and its thorns, but still insist that they were showing us the full flower.
Speak to the point.
So you, Rabbi Dosa, might have added to what you recited from the writings of Koheleth, that when he said, "Walk in the ways of thy heart, and in the sight of thine eyes," that he then went on and wrote further, "But know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment. Therefore remove vexation from thy heart, and put away evil from thy flesh."
Enough of splitting of hairs. Who is parading his ability to quote lines from the words of this Koheleth? I say and I repeat, his words are nigh to abomination. For his counsel is the counsel of despair. And he urges the children of God to seek after nothing here on earth but joy.
What is it, Tarfon?
Eliezer and the brothers too, Jonathan and Dosa, have spoken at length. But I would hear them mention those passages of Koheleth which they abominate.
Eliezer?
Most certainly. Here is the counsel of futility. He has written, "The wise man, his eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness. And I also perceived that one event happeneth to them all." And then he says, "So I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun was grievous unto me, for all is vanity and a striving after wind."
And he goes on, "For what hath a man of all his labor and of the striving of his heart, wherein he laboreth under the sun? For all his days are pains and his occupation vexation. Yea, even in the night his heart taketh no rest. This is also vanity."
And Koheleth says more. "There is nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy pleasure. Is this advice from the Lord?"
Always remember, Jonathan, that the next line is, "This also I saw, that it is from the hand of God."
And again, "I have seen the task which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised therewith. He hath made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he hath set the world in their hearts, yet so that man cannot find out the work that God hath done from the beginning even to the end."
But hear what he wrote next. "I know that there is nothing better than to rejoice and to get pleasure so long as men live. Also, that every man should eat and drink and enjoy pleasure."
It is the gift of God.
But it is a contradiction, and you cannot show how this contradiction may be resolved. I appeal to you, Rabban Gamliel. Is that not true?
The discussion is not closed.
Good. "Eat, drink, and be merry. Is this the passage which my brethren find difficulty in viewing sympathetically? Are these the words which they call abomination? Eat, drink, and be merry is a command. A command to rejoice in the law of God and walk in his paths forever. And so the food is charity to the poor, and the wine is the magical elixir in the Garden of Eden, which man lost when he was disobedient to God's will. As for the words, enjoy pleasure, what can this mean except that each man should show his soul to be good and pure before his fellows? And the pleasures, who insists that these are only worldly pleasures and not spiritual also?"
I would draw your attention to another passage, members of the Sanhedrin, a passage with dangers that we have not yet considered. Hearken. Koheleth wrote, "I returned and considered all the oppressions that are done under the sun. And behold, the tears of such as were oppressed, and they had no comforter. And on the side of their oppressors, there was power, but they had no comforter." Now, here is dangerous talk. Do we seriously consider placing rebellious words like these in our sacred canon?
And mind you, the author went on to write, "Wherefore I praise the dead that are already dead more than the living that are yet alive. But better than both is he that hath not yet been, who hath not seen the evil work that is done under the sun."
What kind of talk is this?
Rebellious.
And again. Again he writes that all is foreordained, nothing left to chance. Everything is fated to happen from the rising of the sun to its setting. I appeal to you. Is this a teaching for our people? Will they learn from a sermon which teaches that there is no use in trying since everything has been predestined?
Verse after verse of this book is downright shocking. If I would not let the child of my house read it, why then should it be trusted to the children of other houses?
The book is popular, Eliezer. I have an idea that the book has been read in many other houses long since.
Popular?
Yes. And if so, then it shows the book fills a need.
Among other needs, the need for beauty. For even you, Eliezer, and you, Jonathan, you will agree that this writer who signs himself Koheleth, this king and son of David, you will agree that he writes beautifully.
Cha! We look for more than beauty in a sacred work. We look for more than an inference that the virtues of diligence and thrift are really only manifestations of greed.
I've known cases.
You agree with him? You agree that thrift is only a kind of greed?
Let's say akin to it. Perhaps its second cousin.
Then this passage. Perhaps you will also seek to justify these lines as sacred wisdom. Listen. If thou seest the oppression of the poor and the violent perverting of justice and righteousness in the state, marvel not at the matter. For one higher than the high watcheth, and there are higher than they.
Surely you do not defend oppression of the poor by the mighty Dosa?
That's not the point. Rather that such words, if read to the wrong people, might serve only to stir up trouble and bring mischief to our land.
Or listen to this. I applied my heart to know madness and folly. I searched in my heart how to pamper my flesh and wine. I cannot even be sure that it was Solomon the Wise who wrote such
and
lines.
And yet...
An example to the young, I suppose.
Hard work is folly and human striving is futile. This is the lesson of Koheleth. Is it the lesson of God?
Koheleth teaches us more, Jonathan. Thus, he teaches that enjoyment is the fruit of labor, for he wrote, "Wherefore I perceive that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his works, for that is his portion. For who shall bring him to see what shall be after him? Work, says this preacher, so that you may enjoy your leisure and not simply for ambition's sake. For he has written, again I considered all labor and all excelling and work that it is a man's rivalry with his neighbor, but this is vanity and a striving after wind."
And there is a practical wisdom in the preacher, Jonathan, that has nothing to do with futilities. Listen to his words. The race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong.
Why should you complain if Koheleth exposes with irony the falsity of mere worldly success, Jonathan?
Neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance, happiness to them all.
And you say that his only lessons are that all is folly and futility? You misread his words. He teaches that work is good. Only not as the aim of life, but because it is a way to find enjoyment and wisdom and goodness, as here. In the morning, sow thy seed, and till evening let not thy hand rest. For thou knowest not which will succeed, this or that, or whether both alike shall be good.
Earnestly, Rabbi Joshua and Rabbi Tarfon reason and argue with the others. The debate is not a new one. For two generations now, wise men have argued about this book of Koheleth, ever since the disciples of Rabbi Hillel opposed those of Rabbi Shammai. Around the half circle in their seated rows, the 71 learned men thoughtfully run their fingers through their beards. Their president, the Rabbi Gamliel, sits back, relaxed, his eyes turning from one speaker to the other, his mind already made up. Soon now, the president of the Sanhedrin must begin to guide the discussion, almost without seeming to do so.
Rabbi Dosa spoke of contradictions inherent in this book.
One after another, Gamliel. Mark you, here is one, from among many. Koheleth in one breath says that justice is often perverted, and the wicked enthroned in the seat of the righteous. But in his next breath, he writes, "I said in my heart, the righteous and the wicked God will judge. For there is a time there for every purpose
and for every work.
Or be reminded, Gamaliel, of this mare's nest. He wrote, a good name is better than precious oil. But this is true, and the sound sentiment in keeping with the best of the Proverbs. Now then, why, when he next sets down the thought, must it be, and the day of death is better than the day of one's birth?
Is it in your mind, Jonathan, that these words were not written by the same man?
Not written by the same man, but it is not well known that Koheleth is King Solomon, and there was only one King Solomon.
Or perhaps the wise king wrote now a sentence, then years later wrote yet another sentence, and set the second down after the first, as though both had been written in the same moment.
I couldn't say.
It would be an explanation for what you and Dosa insist are contradictions.
I couldn't say.
And who was it mentioned the beauty of Koheleth's words?
That was I, Gamaliel.
Which passage had you in mind?
I would point to the majesty of the opening lines, Gamaliel. One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh, and the earth abideth forever. The sun also ariseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to his place where he ariseth. The wind goeth toward the south, and turneth about unto the north. It turneth about continually in its circuit, and the wind returneth again to its circuit. All the rivers run unto the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place whither the rivers go, thither they go again. All things toil to weariness. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which hath been is that which shall be, and that which hath been done is that which shall be done. And there is nothing new under the sun.
But there is even more magic in the closing lines of this book, Gamaliel. Hearken. As thou knowest not what is the way of the wind, or how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the work of God, who doeth all things. In the morning sow thy seed, and till the evening withhold not thy hand. For thou knowest not which shall prosper, whether this or that, or whether they both shall be alike good. And the light is sweet, and a pleasant thing it is for the eyes to behold the sun. For if a man live many years, let him rejoice in them all, and remember the days of darkness, for they shall be many. All that cometh is vanity. Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thy heart, and in the sight of thine eyes. But know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment. Therefore remove vexation from thy heart and put away evil from thy flesh. For childhood and youth are vanity. Remember then thy Creator in the days of thy youth, before the evil days come, and the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are darkened and the clouds return after the rain. In the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble and the strong men shall bow themselves and the grinders cease because they are few. And those that look out shall be darkened in the windows and the door shall be shut in the street. When the sound of the grinding is low, and one shall start up at the voice of a bird, and all the daughters of music shall be brought low. Also when they shall be afraid of that which is high, and the terror shall be in the way, and the almond tree shall blossom, and the grasshopper shall drag itself along, and the caperberry shall fail. Because man goeth to his long home, and the mourners go about the streets, before the silver cord is snapped asunder, and the golden bowl is shattered, and the pitcher is broken at the fountain, and the wheel falleth shattered into the pit, and the dust returneth to the earth as it was. And the spirit returneth unto God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, saith Koheleth. All is vanity.
The 71 learned men, sitting ranged in rows in their traditional half circle under the sky, sat listening quietly, counting each one the number of his years and thinking, reflecting each one on the turbulence of thought and on the trials of his life. And their eyes reached out over the fields to the vineyards, where the women and young men were at work, gathering in the full fruit of the harvest, working to gather the riches of the earth as the year drew to its close. And they were silent for a moment, thinking. Then the president of the Sanhedrin spoke.
He was, in very truth, a wise man, this Koheleth, thou a wise King Solomon. Let us not speak of sentences nor of single thoughts, but of this whole book. And wherein does this whole book contend with Torah?
Is all vanity, Gamaliel? Wisdom, toil, all human striving, vanity?
Koheleth teaches us that the mundane is vanity. He teaches us that it is the rich and full spiritual life of goodness and good works that gives our existence meaning.
And what of his insistence that we, the children of God, should seek after nothing here on earth save joy?
And what greater joy can there be, Reb Eliezer, than to be part of the scheme of the one God? And this is the joy and the realization of joy which Koheleth preaches. Not the joy of gathering in the harvest as a reward for one's labors only, but the joy of sharing in a process of life which flows from God.
But the book is a book of contradictions, Gamaliel.
So much so that I, sitting here, listening now to Dosa and Jonathan and Eliezer, and now to Joshua and Tarfon, might have thought you were discussing two different books. But it is yet one book with one revealed truth. And its truth is the same as that of the doctrine of Moses, that all being is a process having meaning and purpose. And the author of this time process is God, who has created a hero to struggle in the process. And his hero is man. This book was written unnumbered generations ago, and yet it still speaks to us today with many voices and with much to tell us. Why? Because it is a book written out of the turmoil of one moment in the time process, and out of the tensions which contended with each other within one man, a citizen of that turbulent time. We are such men, torn by such tensions, and our time is turbulent. West against East, Rome against Israel.
You would characterize the writings of this Koheleth as proper and orthodox?
I say that Koheleth refutes, in the course of his writing, each of the heretical arguments he himself advances. He speaks with the most diverse wisdom, from the most diverse experience, the better to deal with the common problems of all men. He searches after truth, and he concludes, the end of the matter, all having been heard, fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole man. Koheleth partakes of every man's doubts and weakness. He is assailed by every man's tensions and trials. He has written, there is nothing new under the sun. And so he has been right. And so he will be right. There will always be times of turmoil in the world. Men will always be prey to the tensions of conflict. Which means that the book of Koheleth will always have an audience. And that the preacher, Ecclesiastes, will always be full of fresh meaning for each succeeding generation. there is no more persuasive argument. I propose the inclusion of the Book of Koheleth in the sacred canon. Are any opposed? Then it is so ordered.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Leo J. Goldberger, President of the Jewish Education Committee. Mr. Goldberger.
40 years ago, the Jewish community of New York began an organized effort on behalf of Jewish education. We have just experienced 10 days of soul-searching, of teshuvah, penitence, of return to our faith, to God. What better period could have been chosen as Jewish Education Month? This is the month when we, the Jewish Education Committee, turn to parents and ask of them, yes, urge and beg of them, to provide their children the opportunity to become at one with their heritage. Jewish tradition makes many demands of a Jew, but only through knowledge can we combat the evils which surround us and threaten to engulf all that we hold dear. A Jewish child, when he or she studies Torah, learns of the dictum, ye shall be servants only unto God and not to man. A child reared in Israel's tradition of love of liberty will never permit himself to be enslaved by any dictatorship, be it the dictatorship of the individual or the dictatorship of the state. Our American democracy has drawn its strength from the many cultural groups who have contributed their distinctive characteristics and cultural values to our common heritage. The very basis of our Bill of Rights can be found in the biblical injunction, "One law shall there be unto you, to the stranger as well as to the citizen." The very symbol of American democracy, the Liberty Bell, bears on it an inscription taken from the Bible. Proclaim liberty throughout the land to all the inhabitants thereof. The Jewish school in your neighborhood is waiting to receive your children. It will serve as their spiritual home. It will open their eyes to the beauties of our faith and culture. It will open their hearts to the ethical values of Judaism. It will help them become at one with their heritage, with their country, and with their God.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.